Like my new kicks? Somebody after the first service said, I'm always a little worried when you wear tennis shoes, because I'm afraid you're going to say something that you want to run after you say it, and you leave us standing here. They're just comfortable. Amazing God, startle us with the presence of your grace that reminds us that we are not alone and that our lives matter to you and to one another. Amen. It's not our strength that unites us. It's our vulnerability. I'm convinced that the one thing that we share most in common are tears. Probably the one thing we share most in common is that idea that probably for most of us, if not all of us, there are times in our lives where life can seem unbearable. I'm surprised how often I hear people say, I can't go to worship because I'll cry. I know if I attend worship, I'm going to cry, there'll be tears. I got to pull my life together. When I pull my life together, when I somehow am able to get it all together, then I'll come to worship. That makes me so sad. I mean, this should be the very place, this should be the one place where you feel free to cry. Have you not noticed the Kleenex boxes? You know, this should be the one place where you feel free to be vulnerable. This should be the one place where you feel free to not be okay, to not have it all together. If you don't have any faith, this should be the one place you feel you can come and borrow other people's faith. I mean, if you can't find yourself, if you can't find the voice, if you can't find the notes to sing, this should be the one place that you can come and have that be okay and let other people sing for you. If you can't find the words to a prayer, you're not even sure what prayer does or means, you can't find whatever it is to express what is deepest within you, this should be the one place where that's okay, and to know that there will be others who will pray for you. Wouldn't it be nice to belong to a community of grace where you don't have to wear that mask, where you don't have to pretend that it's okay when it's not okay, where there's not this kind of expectation that you should have everything together? That's the kind of community we strive to be. That's exactly what our mission statement means, creating spaces of grace to cultivate hope, healing, and purpose. I just pray that this is such a space where you are, all of you, not just the good part of you, not just the strong part of you, not just the together part of you. All of you is welcomed. All of you is accepted. No judgment. A healing space. I have shared pretty openly in the past about how I have struggled in the past with depression. I attempted to take my own life when I was 19 years old. I'm grateful every day that I'm alive. But when I was 19, I could not see beyond the horizon of my despair. When I was 19, I couldn't see that on the other side of the mountain of pain that I was experiencing, there was hope. When I was 19, I couldn't see that I would be graced with such an incredible life, that I would be graced with such a beautiful wife, such beautiful sons, that I would be graced with the opportunities to stand on this platform and encourage you, don't give up. that I would have the opportunity to stand here today and to tell you, you matter. Your life matters to God. Your life matters to me. Your life matters to all of us. When I was 19, I couldn't see that depression was part of my story, but it wasn't the whole story. When I was 19, I couldn't see that darkness and suffering do not have the last word. God does. And as it says in the Gospel of John, God's word is that there is a light, even if you can't see it, there is a light that no amount of darkness can extinguish. God's word in the book of Romans says, there's nothing that can separate you from God's love. I couldn't see all of that. My hope today is to mention the word suicide out loud. My hope today is to mention it in this space. My guess is most of you, if not all of you, have never heard a sermon on suicide, which is sad if that's the case, because suicide is something that touches each and every one of us directly or indirectly. So part of my hope is just to take the shame away. You know, it's interesting, when I ruptured a disc in my back, 3 years ago, oh my God, I'd never experienced such physical pain as that. The pain was so intense, so unbearable, I couldn't cope. I honestly couldn't think straight. I couldn't function. But it was interestingly, I could tell you about it. There was no shame to that. I could talk about it. I could say, oh my God, I could whine. I'm very good at whining. Oh my God, my back. And I could hear you say, why don't you go get help here? And so when I went and got help, I could actually tell you. I could be open and in public about the kind of help I was getting. It was amazing to me when I ruptured the disc in my back, how the amazing amount of support I received at that particular time. Today, 3 years later, people still say, how's your back? Are you okay? I am, by the way, fantastic. But isn't it interesting, at a point where I found physical pain almost unbearable, there was no shame. There was no kind of stigma of weakness. But somehow, if we experience the pain of life to be unbearable, somehow that's not okay to talk about. There's shame shrouding that. We need to change that. Suicide is a tragedy at every single level, but it's not shameful. It's born of a hopelessness where you see no other way out. Mimi said earlier, some people say it's a permanent solution for a temporary problem. But when you find yourself in the darkest of places, it doesn't look like that from there. We do our worst thinking when we are overwhelmed with life. We do our worst thinking when we are walking in those places of darkness and despair. We do our worst thinking when we just simply have no hope. We can't see the way out, and we quite frankly don't think it's going to get any better. And the irrationality of our thinking can even think it will be a relief to remove the burden of our lives from those we love. We're not able to see the ripples of pain that will last for years. That's why it's so important to get help. It's so important to talk, because we do our worst thinking. We're not thinking right when we're in that particular place. That's why it's so important to create spaces of grace where it's absolutely okay not to be okay. And people look at you. They look at you. They see you. And they say, "Are you okay?" And they actually wait to listen to how you respond. And you know there will be no judgment. When I hear people, what I would like to say to people who are walking through that place of despair and utter darkness, one thing I'd like to say, I know that place. You're not alone. Another thing I'd like to say, you're in good company. You know, our Bible, some of the greatest characters of our Bible knew seasons of utter despair and darkness. Moses, did you know that? The great leader Moses. God called Moses to set the people of Israel free from slavery in Egypt. And he set them free. And they wandered in the wilderness, that place of struggle. And the people who Moses set free began to hate him. They actually voted for a new leader. A leader who might take them back to Egypt, because at least back in Egypt there was food to eat. Moses felt rejected. He felt all alone. He felt in utter, total despair. He couldn't see beyond the present circumstances. Moses said these words in the book of Numbers, chapter 24. He says, "I can't bear the weight of the people any longer. It's too heavy for me. If this is the way life is going to be, put me to death right now." Moses. I don't think he was kidding. I think he was experiencing an anguish and a despair and a hopelessness where he couldn't see beyond the present circumstances. Somehow, he didn't give up. And after that, he became a great leader of God's people. King David. King David, one of the greatest kings of the history of Israel. King David, many believe, is the writer of many of the Psalms. In fact, are fragile with care. I think, by the way, we all should have that sticker across our foreheads. Fragile. Handle with care. Because every single one of us is carrying some burden none of the rest of us know anything about. Fragile. King David said in Psalm 31, "I am like a broken vessel." Fragile. King David, the greatest king, wrote these psalms of lament, wrote these psalms of overwhelming grief and sadness and depression. Psalm 13. "How long, God? How long? How long will you hide your face from me? How long? How long, God, will I have to carry pain in my heart and sorrow in my soul? How long?" I'm guessing many of us here today have prayed that prayer. How long? Somehow David found the strength, found the resilience, found the capacity to not give up. What I'm curious about is whether or not the freedom he had, the permission he had to be able to express the deepest anguish within him was part of what gave him that strength. Psalms were actually spoken out loud in community, in worship. Can you imagine having a space of grace, of worship, where we can be emotionally honest, where we can lament, where we can express what is deepest within us and know that that will be welcomed and accepted and will experience nothing but love? Maybe that's how David found strength. Some of the greatest heroes of faith, some of those claimed to be closest to God, experienced utter despair. Experienced those moments where they wanted to give up. Jesus from the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? How many of us know that experience? So if it's you in that place, I just want to say you're not alone. I want to say don't give up. I want to say your life matters. Your life matters to God. Your life matters to me. Your life matters to us. One of the most important things I think we need to do is to realize that it may not be visible, but we do have that sticker that says fragile. Handle with care. In one way or another, we are all, as David said, broken vessels. And what we must do is take away the shame. It is absolutely impossible to ask for help in an environment of shame. Be a space of grace. I've asked Cheryl Emerson to join us this morning. Cheryl is a mental health practitioner. Cheryl's a part of this congregation. Cheryl is an incredible resource for the whole community of Central Oregon around the topic of suicide. And so I've asked Cheryl just to take a moment or two, I guess to begin by helping us to know how we might, what are the signals that we can see to know either we ourselves or others perhaps are having suicidal thoughts.
So we'll talk briefly about warning signs. Is this on? Yeah. You here? Okay. And there's a brochure out in the lobby that you may want to pick up. This won't be an exhaustive list of warning signs, but think of it in terms of what people may be saying or what they may be doing. If people are saying that they are feeling hopeless, that they have no reason to live, that they're feeling that they're in pain, a psychic pain that's inescapable. If they're feeling and talking about the fact that they do feel trapped, or they feel like they're a burden to others, or they're talking about revenge in some way. If anyone is talking, singing, writing, drawing about death or dying by suicide, that would also be a warning sign. In terms of things that people are doing, if we know that they're looking online or other formats to find information about how they may die by suicide, it's clearly a warning sign. If they're giving away their prized possessions, if they're saying goodbye to people, making a special attempt in one way, shape, or form to say goodbye to people, if there's increased use of alcohol and other substances, increased aggression, increased irritability, and lack of sleep, or too much sleep. These are things that we want to be checking in with people on.
And if we notice warning signals, or if we're concerned, what are some of the things that we can do? How can we be a presence of help?
And I'll answer that. I saw the screen behind me and I wanted to address one thing, a dramatic mood change. And oftentimes we don't know in the general public that it can be a dramatic mood change actually towards the positive, upbeat. We're looking for a depressed mood generally, but people can actually in the week, particularly preceding their death by suicide, present as upbeat. So we'd want to check in on any kind of dramatic mood change. So in terms of helping people, is that your question? So in terms of helping people, especially who may be thinking about suicide, if you're here today and you're thinking about that, or you know someone who is, if you yourself are, I would just say it with deep compassion and care, please stay. Please stay with us. Please stay here. Please stay alive. And we'll give you some resources to help you with that, to support you and give you the support that you deserve. If you know someone who's thinking about suicide, if you're aware of that or you're wondering, it'd be very helpful not only to know these warning signs and kind of catalog them in some way for yourself, but also to know, I'm going to go to the next slide, the phone number, 1-800-273-TALK or 273-8255. It's a national lifeline. There's also a local number, 541-322-7500. After hours, it's extension 9, and you'll see there's also a text line.
Can I interrupt and say, this is one of those moments, take out your phone. take out your phone and in your contacts, put that, particularly that top number in. So I'm giving you permission to take out your phone. Sorry.
You never know when you'll need that phone number, either to support yourself in helping someone else, sitting down and making that phone call with someone, and there are people on the other end who can help you and support you and offer hope and healing.
Is there anything else that you would, obviously we know that we can't cover all of this, and that was not our intent, is to say everything that has to be said about this important topic. There is a resource table as you leave out there that has a lot of resources for you. We encourage you to take it for yourself, for others. There are also some mental health practitioners I want to point out for a second. If you want to talk to someone today, make a connection with someone today, have a question you want to follow up, there's Barry Heath right here, if you can raise your hand, Barry. And these people are going to be wearing a ribbon. And there's Diane Irvin. Where's Diane? Diane's back there. And there's Lori Koski, who's related to me over there. So know that they would be happy to provide a space for you as well. So what might you leave us with?
I'm going to leave you with a quote from Desmond Tutu. He says that hope is being able to see the light despite the darkness. And I also want you to know that those who are suffering with thoughts of suicide actually sometimes can't see that light that leads them to hopefulness. So everyone in this room gets to be part of a community who can do a number of things to actually bring light to a very dark situation for people and therefore offer hope. And that is, ask someone. If you're concerned, ask someone clearly, directly, and without judgment if they're having thoughts of suicide. I know that there's a fallacy in the general public that if we do that, we'll actually plant the idea in someone's head, and I want to assure you that's categorically untrue. In fact, if we ask someone if they're suicidal clearly and directly and without judgment, we can actually help get them to the support they deserve, and we can actually save a life. So we want to ask. We want to stay with a person if they've told us, yes, they are thinking of suicide. We want to remove any kind of lethal access there is in the environment. And we want to go with a person to the emergency department where they can get some additional professional support or call a mental health professional so they can get that support. There's a line in A Beautiful Mind, the movie, that says, believe that something extraordinary is possible. And I believe that as we ask people and we engage with people and we let them know that they matter enough that we see them and we're wondering how they're doing, that we can actually do the extraordinary and potentially save a life.
Great. Would you thank Cheryl, please? But it's to think about how we can be light bearers. I've conducted too many memorial services, too many, for those who have died by suicide. I too want to share that goal of zero. One such memorial service was a young man by the name of Taylor, 19 years old. I couldn't help but think that so easily could have been me. Hear the words that I spoke. Hear the words that I spoke at Taylor's memorial service. In that moment when Taylor's thinking became so tunnel-visioned that he couldn't see any hope. In that moment, his thinking became so tunnel-visioned that he thought there was nothing beyond the horizon of his despair. In that moment when his thinking became so tunnel-visioned, when he thought things would never, ever change, and he really thought that the only answer was to take his own life, it was God's heart that was the first to break. It was God who shed the first tear. And I imagine God speaking to Taylor with a gentle voice, saying to Taylor, "I am heartbroken. I am filled with sorrow because I could see your future. I am filled with sorrow because I could see the plans I had for you. I'm filled with sorrow because I could see the hope that was beyond the horizon of your despair. I'm heartbroken because I could see the beautiful things that you would do in your life. I could see that you would make a difference in this world. I was going to take the hard things and bring good. I was going to take the pain and make something beautiful. But then I imagine God wrapping God's arms around Taylor, arms of mercy, gently wiping the tears from his eyes. And whispering in his ear, "I love you. You are my beloved child. You belong to me now and forever. You're loved with a love that will never, ever let you go." You matter. Your life matters. It matters to God. It matters to me. It matters to us. May we be graced with the light that we might be light bearers wherever there is darkness. Continue to worship God as the morning offering is received.